What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. You are now listening to Footy Prime, the podcast, hosted by Danny Dicchio, Craig Forrest, and James Sharman.
It is November the 4th. It is Footy Prime. I hope your weekend was great. A fun, packed show today. We have a guest coming later in room 442. I won't tell you who it is just yet, but let's just say that both Deej and Craig know him very, very well. He played in the 2002 World Cup, a really great career, and I'm sure there'll be some stories, some of which he'll tell us off-air, some of which he'll tell us on-air, but I look forward to that. We'll get to a little bit of CPL, a little MLS, obviously the Premier League, but before we start today, I want to quickly just remind you to follow us on all social media platforms. On Twitter, you can follow us at footy_prime. Instagram is Footy Prime, the podcast, as is Facebook. We are taking over social media. And, of course, as I always mention, we are open to any sponsorship you might get to give away.
Still waiting for them beers.
Yeah, a beer would be nice.
Yeah. A beer. Yeah, we'll share one.
Once upon a time, actually, in a distant land and a distant time, we had a great deal with Guinness.
You got a Guinness t-shirt on, I see.
Yeah, I have actually, yeah. And we were given four Guinness.
You're really pushing it, aren't you?
Yeah. Four Guinness.
Oh, yeah, we were pumping their tires big time.
Yeah. Four Guinness.
Hugging the inflatable Guinness bottle, sending it out on social media. We got four beers.
We told our stories, Craig and I, the first time we tried Guinness, and it changed our lives. Yeah. Man, the things we were doing, and then four Guinness, and our producer drank them all.
Yeah, I never got
Dan Fernandez. All right, anyway. Fellas, let's get to the stories at hand. We almost saw a real shift in the power structure of the Premier League this past weekend. Man City and Liverpool did not put in great performances. They're both losing their matches against Aston Villa and Southampton, but they both scored late goals, in particular Liverpool, of course. They're finding ways to win, aren't they? Late goals, killers, aren't they? But are you impressed by these performances, given what happened, Deitch, or are you a little bit concerned for their current form?
I'm not concerned. I think it kind of adds to the excitement of the Premier League, Craig. I really do. I think what we're seeing this year is that there's a lot more parity, especially with the teams coming up. Really, really doing well, especially against the teams up the top. I mean, Sheffield United have been playing very well and getting results, but Villa really put Liverpool to the sword at the weekend, and Southampton, who got that drubbing last week. Everyone was expecting it to be another drubbing, another Craig Forrest special, but they got that early goal and they defended well, and it wasn't till two late goals. I mean, that Walker goal a couple of minutes to go, I didn't really see it coming, but as they always say, and coaches always say after games where they've just squeaked through, it shows good character within the team, because if you can win games when you're not playing particularly well, that's a sign of a championship team, Shams. We always talk about the highs of when they're playing extremely well and when the front three are buzzing and creating chances and scoring goals aplenty, but when they're not playing very well and they're squeaking out results like this, that shows a test of real character and team mentality.
That's right. I mean, that Southampton performance was black and white compared to the one against Leicester. Mm. It was amazing. Even when they're playing away at City, you're under pressure. They closed down. They're well-organized. Hasselhoodo must have done a terrific job. Just despite, I mean, they must have been disappointed driving home, not getting something. But that reaction after losing 9-0 to Leicester was a great reaction, and they must be proud of themselves for that. But you're right, the best teams, it's incredible how that Liverpool game, I didn't see them winning it. Maybe getting a draw in the end, but the way that game was going, I just did not see them getting it. And then just two terrific goals, and there you go, bang.
There was also another dubious VAR call in that Liverpool game where Firmino got caught offside by some armpit hair. Armpit hair or armpit?
Can we get this segment sponsored? Every week there's a bloody VAR segment. Get it
VAR
sponsored.
Segment of the week.
You know what? I'm for VAR. It's got a purpose. but they're not using it right. I don't think they're not doing it in the right manner. It was for the blatant and obvious mistakes. Now you got one that is tight as that. Could they definitively say that he was actually like, it's so close. We want goals. That's not the reason why VAR.
I thought the advantage of offside was giving the attackers, the forwards, the advantage if it was that close as well, Craig.
Yeah. Well, they've obviously decided. Goals, yeah. Right? They've decided if it's offside, it's offside. But it's so incredibly close that that's not what people are wanting it to.
No.
What about the Dele Alli handball that wasn't given in the Spurs game?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was clearly a handball, wasn't it?
Well, we saw Laporte for Man City last season, exactly the same situation where he's not used his hand, but it's hit his hand when it's been elevated and the referees give it. And then for me, that whole game, Everton Spurs at the weekend was all over the place, whether it be the refereeing, whether it be the tragic incident at the end with Gomez, some offside calls, some goals being disallowed, some last minute equaliser from Everton. It was just an absolute shit show of a game. But again, like, I just think they're putting too much emphasis on this VAR now. There was, I think it was in the Chelsea Watford game, there was a VAR call that took nearly 3.5 minutes to actually make sense of. And
yeah. If it takes that long,
you're taking the excitement away from
it. If it takes that long, clearly there is clear and obvious. It's not clear and obvious, clearly.
No, exactly.
So therefore it shouldn't be given, right, in that case.
Right.
If it takes 3 minutes.
Yeah. If it's taking someone in the studio at Stockley Park, wherever it is, that long to look at something, then as you say, it's not clear and obvious. We can see on the screen, it's very difficult for these referees to see in real time. But if you can see on the screen that something is not clear and obvious and you're having to rewind, forward, superimpose, zoom in, whatever it is, it's not clear and obvious. So you stick with the referee's decision, bang, go back to it.
Yeah,
not 3.5 minutes later, my Bovril's gone cold by then.
Yeah.
And I'm having to go back to the...
There was one in the Under-17 World Cup as well for Canada. It went on, I think it might have been more than 3.5 minutes before they figured that out.
That's right. It's just
unacceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think referees, if they were honest, that they'll admit they like it or hate it? It helps them to a certain degree. It takes pressure off them, but a lot of these guys have egos. They want to command this game and control the game and call it the way they want to call it.
Sure, they want to get it right, of course, but I don't know. I don't know if it matters to them as much as it does to the general fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's ruining the game in a way that we didn't think it would.
I actually feel sorry for the referees, and that's the first time you're going to hear me say that in my whole career. I actually feel sorry for them because they're being put under more scrutiny now, more pressure to make decisions. And this whole monitor thing where they're not checking the monitor. They've been told that they can check the monitor on the sideline. None of them have checked it so far. They're actually hoping that their assistant, whoever it is in the studio, is going to help them out. But I thought the whole purpose of the assistant in the studio was to help them maybe guide them, make this decision right, to give them a little shout, look, maybe you've got that one wrong. But it seems like every decision, there's like 4 or 5 every game now. And that's what's really, really pissing me off at the moment, is that the game, the flow of the game is being stopped, Greg.
As well as, and it could be a situation where somebody gets hurt too, they let things continue on. Because if they're not sure, they want to let it continue on. And then if it's an offside, the flag will, you know. So the linesmen, the assistants aren't putting their flags up when they
Everyone's
when they
running
should.
Scared. They're all stepping on eggshells. Like,
yeah.
They don't know. They don't want to be that center of attention in making something wrong or being told by VAR that you've got that completely wrong. I thought it was to help the referee. But it's actually, they've done a full 180 now. They've gone the other way, saying you're getting actually a lot more wrong now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there needs to be something done with either the referees association to help these referees out, to help them maybe for next year if it's still in play, to kind of educate them and train them better, because it's not being done properly at the moment. In other countries, we're seeing it done a lot more with a lot more fluidity. But in this country, I know it's our first year in England, it's really poor at the moment.
You know, every week I say I don't want to talk about VAR, but it's impossible not to. It's becoming the story of the season, isn't it?
Mm.
even more than Leicester and Sheffield United, which is a real shame,
well,
though, isn't it?
No.
Yeah. Well, here we are.
No.
Here we are once again starting the podcast, and we find a way to get to it. It's difficult to avoid it, right?
It is.
I don't know. Like I said, for a long time, I begrudgingly accepted it. Now I'm just sick and tired of it. You don't need it. This mistake. I mean, listen, last year we were bitching about poor refereeing decisions, right? We just like bitching about stuff, right? Well, if it's not VAR, it'd be something else.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's life.
That's life.
It is, isn't it? Some good days, some bad days.
Mainly bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's speak for yourself. I'm at about 20% good.
Bad weekends for Villa and Southampton, actually, given what happened with those late goals. The late goal in football, you know, adds so much drama. An otherwise crap game can be brought to life with a late goal. And we think, oh, man, the memories, that was incredible. But the previous 89 minutes were terrible. Do you have any memories specifically of late goals you either scored or conceded that just affected the rest of the weekend or your careers?
Well, try to forget those ones, but oh, sure, there's several for sure over the years. We had a big comeback. I remember being 3-0 down and coming back and beating Swindon, of all teams, when they were actually a Premier League team, going back a long way. Yeah, it's true. I mean, late goals are a big part of it. And with the sport, you know, with not tons of goals being involved, you can spark off something big or disastrous in seconds. And as a goalkeeper, I used to remember just, you know, trying to keep the players in front of you concentrated and focused on, you know, finishing off games as opposed to conceding those late goals, because everybody has experienced them. So, you know, you don't want to be put in a position where you're going to let a goal in because of lack of concentration.
Did you ever make a mistake to concede a late goal?
Oh, for sure. Somewhere down the line. But as a goalkeeper, you're supposed to forget about those, so yeah, hence I don't remember them.
Right, it's a very short memory occasionally.
I remember when Harry Redknapp, this is when Bournemouth were in the lower divisions, we played them in an FA Cup game. And I remember when going over the wall, it was so easy. I read it. It was right in my hands. I'd already decided I was going to throw it before I caught it. And it went straight through my hands.
Oh, no.
Didn't hit the back of the net.
That's when Harry was at Bournemouth?
That was when he was at Bournemouth, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So pre-West Ham.
Yeah. He still came and bought me, though, later.
You're going to say, yeah, exactly. On the cheap
for. Really cheap.
That's his leverage, probably, wasn't it?
Bargain bucket.
That's his leverage.
One of my worst memories of a last-minute goal, I wouldn't say it was a last-minute, it was during that infamous time of Sir Alex Ferguson, Fergie time. We were playing Man United at home, and this is a year where we were really struggling with QPR, and every point counted. We went into 7 minutes of extra time at Loftus Road. I scored against Man United. I think we were 1-1 at the time. And King Eric scored a last-second goal in, the 98th minute. And we got relegated that year.
Oof.
And I was devastated. Oh. Obviously, I support QPR. But it was a tough time for us. We were going through a little bit of transition. Sir Les Ferdinand had left by then, so myself and Kevin Gannon were the two strikers.
He was just
up
Les
top.
Then, though, wasn't he?
Les, yeah. Big Les. But that was a devastating time for me. And 97 minutes, King Eric Cantona steps up, gets in on the end of a cross, and that really deflated us. For me, we got relegated later on that season, but that game was pivotal in us getting relegated that year.
As a big fella, how are you used in set pieces like that? You are obviously pretty important.
He was taking them. Delivering them in, swinging, out swinging, you name it.
Right.
No, he was, let me guess, you were at the far post.
Far post, yeah. Back post.
Yeah.
You sweep everything up.
Yeah.
But no one was picking up King Eric that day, so.
Well, why would you? It's just King Eric, you know?
Just volleyed it in, and that was a devastating, not last minute, but a 97th minute goal.
Was Fergie time a real thing for you players, or was it just a fan and media conjured?
Well, I mean, statistically speaking, maybe not with, well. It is with Alex Ferguson, for sure. But teams that are losing at home get an average of a minute longer than a team winning at home when the time is added on. That's just fact. So, you know, over time. So did they actually get extra time if they were losing? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Was Old Trafford intimidating? People say it's from a fan perspective, it's not.
No.
But the fact that you played these great United teams at home, they were a different beast.
Right. Yeah. It was more intimidating the players than the actual fans, and they could say that the other way around for different teams. Internationally, like teams like El Salvador playing away or Honduras playing away. tough place. But no, Old Trafford, not so much. not as far as intimidation goes. They were so used to winning at that time too that you're kind of lambs to the slaughter.
Yeah, but at the same time, less pressure surely entering those games, thinking no one expects us to do anything in these games.
No, that's true. Yeah, you're just trying to keep it down three or four,
right,
not nine.
That's why it's so hard to see it like Old Trafford as it is right now. With the transition they're going
it's
through.
It's not that difficult.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and
Liverpool is like glowing right now. Mind you, still got to win a title, eh?
Yeah, big game this Sunday coming up. Ooh. Man City-Liverpool. Title decider.
Beautiful.
Well, we know Fergie loved playing a 4-4-2, don't we? Well, now it's time for room 4-4-2. That is what they call a segue, my friends. That is what makes me a veteran broadcaster.
Oh, veteran,
thanks, fellas.
Veteran, yeah. That's
something good. Or other. Something or other. It's room 442 where we invite a guest into Footy Prime. And I'm really excited about this week's guest, a former England international, played at the World Cup in 2002, played at Blackpool, QPR, West Ham, Man City, Cardiff. According to his Wikipedia page, he's still playing as well. We'll ask him about that. Also happens to be a former teammate and good friend of both Craig Forrest and Danny Diccio. It is Trevor Sinclair. Trevor, welcome to Footy Prime.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Hey, Trevor, I got to ask you a question right out the gates. When you were playing with Deitch, you guys had a goal of the season, sort of award that you guys had between your players. You all put in a few quid. And Deitch scored a worldie. And everybody paid up the bet because nobody was going to beat that to the end of the season. Deitch goes on to spend the money. And then you came up with, I have to say, as good a goal as I've ever seen anywhere. The overhead kick. Well, how far out were you? 20 really yards? Kind. 20
by
yards?
By the way, Deitch, you still owe me that money.
So, he said he paid it back.
Actually, if I do remember, Trevor was a very nice man and he swayed his money.
Really?
Yeah.
For a goal like that?
No, the reason why, though, is probably because me and Trevor went on a night out and he spent all my money that I won.
just the one night.
But that story, though, is a classic story, Deitch, because as you had it, you know, you were winning that bet, so to speak, with that incredible goal you scored. And it was the end of the season, money being paid, and you'd spent the money.
Yes.
Right? And then Trevor comes in against Barnsley, right, in the FA Cup.
Yes.
And scored that. If you haven't seen it, we'll post it, but Google it. It's, you know, I think you just Google Trevor Sinclair bicycle kick. Yeah, it's QPR. Absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But the problem was I actually meant my volley. Trevor kind of slipped on a like wet crisp packet that day. It was a rainy day at Loftus Road. And he kind of slipped and he had no right to even try a bicycle kick from outside the box, from across. I think it was from David Bardsley at the time. And it went in and everyone was so shocked, apart from Trevor, because that was Trevor. Trevor done stuff like that every day in training. Where my goal against Wolves, I did not do every day in training. I used to, like, we have to go and collect them balls from outside the training ground. So that was my only kind of memory from that, Trevor. But we had a good team spirit back in those days with Alan McDonald, who kind of paid up the money on the bus on the way home from Wolverhampton that day. And I was very, very happy with that money. And me and Trev kind of went out on a night out and spent it probably in the first round.
Any guilt, Trevor? Any guilt ripping off Deitch of goal of the season?
Not really. I've got to be honest, not really. It was obviously one of my best goals I've ever scored. But I'm pleased that Deitch brought up the situation that he'd seen me do that in training, because it was something that... You talk about marquee moves that players have in today's game and, he's got a great free kick on him or he's got a fantastic whip on a cross. That was something that I did in training week in, week out. And I think, one, because of the teammates I had, they would encourage it. Two, Jerry Francis was a superb manager and he was always encouraging you to express yourself. And three, it was just something that I kind of naturally had in the locker. And, I'm pleased that Deitch said that, because it's quite difficult for me to say that, oh yeah, I meant it, and it weren't the first time. I did that in training quite often to people that didn't train with me, because they'll say, oh yeah, he's just showing off. But it is actually something that I used to do quite a lot in training, isn't it, Deitch?
Yes, a lot. And I tried it a couple of times, and that's why I think I had two back operations.
Yeah, but you are a lot taller than me, so you're coming down from a lot higher.
Trev, you're involved in another great goal at West Ham when I think you crossed the ball for Decanio for the goal of the season.
He couldn't miss.
Come on. He couldn't miss.
He put it on a sixpence for
that was a scissor kick, right?
Was that the scissor kick. Yeah.
Stride. Oh no, yeah. It was wonderful.
I was actually involved in the build up for that. You know, Trev.
Yeah.
I rolled the ball out to somebody.
Yeah.
I remember Lomas take it. He was overlapping you, and I think he fucked you off when he overlapped because you didn't give him the ball. You made a 40-yard run, and he was all pissed off. And then next thing you know, I was in the net, and it was like,
but come on. You know what Lomi used to do? He used to just like try and have a heavy touch so he could top the opponent and then take him out of the game. Instead of using skill to go by him, he'd have a heavy touch, leave a little bit on him, and get through him.
Yeah.
Craig, you know what it was like. Paolo was a rule to himself. You know, in training, if it weren't going his way, he'd just boot the ball up in the air and walk off. With a strop. But when he was on his game, he was literally one of the best players I ever played with. Fantastic guy off the pitch as well. I really got on with him. Yeah. But that goal, I mean, you know, for me talking about me trying scissor kicks, that was something that come naturally to me. The goal that he finished, I wouldn't even tried that because it was something that, just looking at the angle of the ball and the trajectory of the ball, I don't even know how I would like begin to try and work that out. And, you know, we talk about footballers understanding, you know, time and space. That's something that I would have had to bring down. So for me, that was an unbelievable finish and something that I could never even attempt.
Yeah, it was special. You know, we talk about West Ham, the characters in that dressing room. I mean, finished, you know, for 5 years straight in the top 10.
Yeah.
And the characters were amazing. I mean, Harry Redknapp, starting with him as a manager, it was difficult for him to even manage a lot of those players, but he seemed to like it, didn't he? He brought in, you know, when he brought in Razor and had to deal with John Moncur and DiCanio and some really interesting characters.
Yeah, listen, Ian Wright, John Artston, you know, the list goes on. It was just a ridiculous dressing room of pure egos, really. I think he used to just think, right, he's got a lot of confidence, he's having himself, let's get him in, and kind of he'd bring the best out in the players. And it was similar to QPR, I've got to say, because probably the 5 years at QPR and 5 years at West Ham is where I played my best football and where I actually enjoyed the dressing rooms the most as well. And fantastic decade in the capital. And looking back at that West Ham team, though, the success we had, and we used to go out and party, and, you know, to still finish top 5 one year, and the amount of alcohol we must have drank that year. If we wouldn't have touched the drop, we might have won the league, who knows? But it was just that both dressing rooms were outstanding, and it was an absolute privilege to be part of both teams. I remember when you came back, actually, Craig, because you were kind of in and out of the team with Shaka. And then you went and played in, I think it was the Gold Cup over in, I'm not sure where it was in.
Yeah, in the States,
It was in the States, yeah. And you come back and you was absolutely on flames. I don't know what you'd been taking, but you was a lot better.
Yeah, what were you taking, Craig?
He'd had a glass of confidence, and he'd come back.
That's
and
exactly
different
it.
Class. Yeah. Different class. And that's like, I've got to say, that's got one of the best like goalkeeping times that I played in front of, just the confidence and the sheer audacity of you, like keeping clean sheet after clean sheet, and the transformation was amazing.
You know, we did have a good group of keepers too, right? When I came here, Ludic McCloskey, legend, you know, David James spent some time there, of course. Shaka, brilliant, great character, great teammate. All in all, it was brilliant. I should have to quickly tell about the story about our club has been touched, certainly West Ham, from testicular cancer. John Hartson, myself, the young lad there too as well. But I remember the last day I had it was a Monday morning, had to go for my scan. Remember the dressing was full, it was after training. You were lying there getting a massage from Rupert, who was he Lennox Lewis's father-in-law? I think he was, right?
I think he was. I mean, listen, he had the biggest sausage fingers you've ever seen. He was so powerful.
And he was. I mean, it was a great massage, but he was allergic to oil.
Yeah,
so his hands were all crusty and like bleeding. And it was like, Roop, what's going on? So they ended up spending some more money, remember, getting some oil that didn't actually, he wasn't allergic to, which was kind of nuts, right?
Definitely. So anyway, I remember that day quite prominently, Dave, when you came in. It was a really difficult time for you, wasn't it?
It was, of course, but everything worked out positively, and you know it has done for many people. But I remember coming in the dressing room, you were getting a rub from Rupert, and I said, I'm going for a scan today for my balls, and you had said, whoa, I'd actually had a scan a few days before because you had had something wrong with one of your testicles. And I remember your line there, and I had your testicle in my hand, and you had mine.
We had a little cupping session,
and I was like, "Hey, Trev, yours feels nothing like mine." He's like, "Yeah, nothing like mine either." So, hence, he had the lucky bump, and I had the unlucky bump.
Yeah, Jesus. Well, and the other difference was mine were full and yours were empty because I was married, and you wasn't. that was the biggest difference.
That's what they told you when they had a scan, eh? It was just full.
Yeah, full. Yeah.
But it all worked out well.
I've been with her 25 years, the poor girl. But no, listen, it was good that you went for that test because obviously it's a huge problem.
And you know, it is a huge problem, Trev. You know, it's a fast-growing cancer in men. And, you know, I think, you know, we were lucky enough to be in a position where we were comfortable enough to go see somebody, talk about it, cup each other,
and
do whatever. Right?
So, each other out.
You know, guys should be comfortable enough to, you know, if there's something wrong with their testicle, to go get it checked out.
Yeah, I think it's amazing, actually, really. That's important. I mean, the fact that obviously you're good mates, teammates, but there was no ego or testosterone, so to speak. And it's like, you know what? There's an issue here. This could be very serious.
Yeah.
And there was no ego back in those days, Sean.
I think that's half the problem with men, especially in that era. We wouldn't talk to each other. You know, we'd bottle things up and we'd try and deal with our own problems. But I think now with the mental health issues, I think a lot more people, a lot more men especially, you know, starting to express what they're going through and getting help. And I think it's great because back in the day, because of our egos and because of the way we were brought up to be tough and, you know, resilient and never like look like we had a weakness, I think that went with it. I think now, you know, kids, the players now, they're not so resilient and they're much more willing to go and get help and speak about issues that they've got. So, yeah, more praise for that.
Trev, on another kind of issue that's going on at the moment in our sport, and I want you to speak from personal experience as well, growing up as a young boy in Manchester and then moving to Blackpool through your academy days. This racism thing's not going away in our sport, and I know you've been a big backer of Raheem Sterling, and he's been kind of helped along the way, but now he's actually come out, even with the press and the media, who have been actually pretty hard on him in the last 3 or 4 years, but now they're starting to come around and saying he's one of the most influential black players within not only the UK but the world right now. And there's another incident yesterday with Balotelli, who nearly walked off the field. And just tell us from your experience growing up in Blackpool, in Lancashire, which there wasn't a lot of black people around in the early days, was there, even when you were growing up, and then having to come down to London. And you know, I spent a lot of time with you, and you helped me along the way. I grew up in a Caribbean area in West London, but even from your Moss side days growing up, and then, as you said, moving to Blackpool, moving to QPR, big city, was it tougher back then, or do you still think it's as tough now for a black player playing in the league?
I think it's different. I think, you know, back in the day, if someone called you something, they'd call you something, and they'd probably want a reaction. I've had it many times, and I was lucky because I won a scholarship to boarding school, as you know, Deitch, and I went for 2 years living in a boarding school, getting coached by Dave Sexton, Mike Keller, with great players like Andy Cole, Gary Flitcroft, Chris Makin, you know, Ian Walker. So many players went on to play for the country from that 2 year period, 14 to 16 years old. So we had a bit more resilience about us. We understood that kind of ethnic difference. We were living amongst each other, white guys, black guys, Asian guys in them two England squads. So for me, when I came out and I started playing for Blackpool and I had the banana thrown on the pitch and, you know, the experienced plays saying, you know, hit the black guy, but not in them words. I feel like I had the tools to deal with it, although it was still unacceptable. I thought I had the tools to deal with that. Now going, you know, I accepted it. It was just part of the society at the time.
Yeah.
But you thought society had moved on. I just think it's been brushed under the carpet and it's a little bit more sly now. And now it's starting to rear its ugly head again. I feel like really inspirational, influential people like Raheem, like Balotelli, they've got to be leaders for us, you know, and they've got to try and you know, when someone says something or does something, they've got to bring them up on it.
Yes.
And just going back, you know, for me, it's the most upsetting thing is obviously I've got four sons, three of whom who play football, and for me to think that they may, you know, experience racism in the 21st century. It's just, that is the most depressing, sad thing. But listen, it's not going away. And, you know, I feel it's the federations that have got to deal with this, as well as the players. I think the federations have got to start being a much harsher with their fines.
We give a lot of stick.
Nations.
We give a lot of stick to Balotelli with his immature behaviour, but I have to give him a lot of credit because the way he's dealt with racism, and he's played in Italy. The stuff coming out of Verona this weekend has been absolutely ridiculous.
The manager of Verona, Ivan Juric, says that there was nothing racist.
No, and
he denies it.
You've got to remember, this is a young black guy that's grown up in Italy, which is a predominantly white country. They're still stuck in their ways in Italy. Not everyone, but the majority are still stuck in their ways. He's had no support from the federation. So I actually think he's done a good job so far, but he hasn't had the support of... I'm not talking about the federations, but the clubs he's played for, and also the players that he's played with, like Bonucci last year.
I thought
that was disgraceful.
Even yesterday, when he was trying to walk off, his teammates were dragging him to say, "Don't walk off." Yeah. I was thinking, if you respected Balotelli and you actually cared for him and knew that he was, you know, taking this racist abuse, you'd be like, "Leave him, let him go. I'll go with him." Do you know what I mean? That's backing your teammates. And I didn't see that yesterday. But
I agree, Trevor.
I think it's engraved into the society in Italy. Mm-hmm. Not all people, but, you know, especially a lot in Europe, definitely in England, because, you know, it's all right pointing fingers. We've got problems in our own country that we have to deal with. But I think as a whole, the federations, UEFA, FIFA, they've got to be stronger. They've got to start banning nations, banning teams. Mm-hmm. And they'll soon stop doing it. They'll soon stop allowing these racists to go into the stadiums and support a club or pretend they're supporting a club just so they can hurl racist abuse.
Well, you're right, Trevor. And it's about the other players, too, supporting it. I don't see enough of the white players going, "Hey, you know, this is freaking unacceptable. I'm going to walk off with them." Because once the players start walking off, then that's when the federations and the people and the authorities are going to start – they're going to be forcing them to do something. Because, as you know, they fine people for – if you come up with a sponsorship that's not in line with FIFA or Europe, you'll get fined way more than you will do with any kind of racial comment.
Can I tell you what I think is a problem? I think the players know that it's a certain racist element going on in the grounds. I think they're scared to upset their own fans or the fans within the stadium.
Yeah,
I think they know what's going on.
It's going to take someone brave, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think Balotelli, you know, he's never been one who's shy of coming forward or, you know, showing his opinions.
But he needs support.
And I think he's been really brave there.
He needs support.
Well, we saw I think it was Haringey match in the FA Cup last month.
They
walked off the pitch. It was great and it's good for them, but you need that big name to make a global statement, sadly, right? And Bello will be there.
Just going back on that, something happened in the summer in pre-season with QPR, our former club, Deitch.
Yeah.
And... you know, Les and I think Mr. who's the director there, came out and made a complaint in writing to UEFA, to FIFA, and it's been 10 weeks now, and it was all over the news over here a couple of days ago, and none of them have yet replied. You know, the whole team, the QPR team, walked off the pitch because of the racism that was going on. I'm not sure if it was on the pitch or off the pitch, and they've made the complaint in writing through the correct channels. And UEFA and FIFA have still not done anything about it. And I think that's where you've got to look to the problem. And now you look at QPR. They've got Tony Fernandez, who's from Asia. You look at Les, obviously, he's Afro-Caribbean. There's empathy there in the boardroom. And that's why when they see their players receiving this kind of racist abuse, they've got sympathy, they've got empathy, they understand it. Now, this is the problem with UEFA and FIFA, because there's not enough diversity in the boardroom. Mm. Now, unless you get that, you're not going to get the empathy, the understanding, and nothing's going to get done.
That's a great point. For example, the Bulgaria match last month, you know, we all saw that, how sickening it was. Yeah. One match stadium ban, one match suspended sentence, and an €85,000 fine. That's what they got for it.
Yeah, it's a business. You know what? Sometimes if you get the odd couple or a group of four who've gone in there, had a bit of drink or whatever, and they just decide that they're going to hurl abuse, you can't really stop that. But this was an organised, huge amount. We're talking hundreds who had gone there primarily to racistly abuse England players. You know them guys that are going in with all in black, with their hoods, standing together in the area where they sing in the stadium. They're going for one reason. Now, that's why I feel there's accountability for Bulgaria, because they need to deal with that. And not dealing with it is kind of either it's promoting it or it's trying to pretend there's not a problem.
Yeah. Yep. Great, great point. It's a sad point we're at in the game. We know, like you said, we thought it was improving, but clearly it's not. Listen, Trevor, we're almost out of time here, but I want to get to, are you still playing? Because according to the wiki page, Squires Gate in was it Northern Conference? Forgive me. If you go, forgive me where it is. But are you still playing?
I played, basically, it's always been a dream of mine. I was quite a young dad. I had Reese when I was 20, which is my oldest son. He doesn't play football. But then I had Isaac, who's my second oldest son, and he's just turned 18. But a couple of years ago, he got released off Blackpool as a apprentice, like before he got his apprenticeship. And we started an academy for him and his teammates, and it's going really strong. He started playing men's football when he was 16 because the college league that he was playing in wasn't strong enough. Now, I thought it was a great opportunity for me to be able to achieve another ambition, that's play on the same pitch in the same side as my son. So I registered for the team. I trained with them once or twice a week. And I got on the pitch and it wasn't really for me. It was just for me to be able to say, you know what, I played in the same. And I actually set him up, and he's so unselfish that he cut inside and laid it to his mate who skied. And I was thinking, it's what we do in the garden, you know, he's like, yeah. The kids are 5 years old. Sinclair, to Sinclair, to Sinclair. No!
Nice.
And he passed it, the idiot. But no, that was the main reason. But listen, I love coaching. I've got my UEFA A. I know you have D. I'm not sure what you're doing, Craig, but I love passing on my knowledge to young players. You know, just tiny little details where you'll tell them different bits and bobs. You'll demo it, and then you'll see them go and execute that in a game, and they're successful with it. And you just think, I'm passing something on that. And that's one of the greatest rewarding feelings you can have as a coach.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Deitch, any ambitions to get on the field with your boys at some point? I mean, you're really old, you're broken down.
Yeah.
Oh, Deitch is back. I can't
feel my ankles in the morning when I wake up.
Hey, let me ask you, actually, Trevor, I've got to ask, last question, okay, quickly. Out of Deitch and Craig, right, former teammates of yours, which one was a better teammate?
Oh,
that's
God.
That's a harsh question. Huh? Harsh.
Well, I would say Deitch.
Deitch was closer to you, lived closer. Yeah, when I was playing for QPR, I was younger. We went out drinking a lot more and socialising. And Deitch taught me how to DJ. DJ. I'm not sure you know about that.
Oh, yeah. He tells us all the time.
Then he went to West Ham. We were a little more professional.
We had a fantastic relationship. But listen, love Craig to bits. You know, we always had a great relationship with all my teammates, and Craig was no different. And yeah, I'm just pleased that both of you guys are healthy. You know, you're still enjoying the game, and you know, you're far away, but you know, one day maybe you can invite me out there.
100%.
Anytime.
Yeah.
There's a chair on Footy Prime for you anytime, mate. Anytime.
Yeah.
We can't pay you, but
we don't pay well, but
that's all right. I'll do it for beers.
Done.
We could do that.
That's a struggle as well.
Hey, Trevor, thank you so much for this, mate. We'd love to get you back on at some point. I want to get into the 2002 World Cup at some point, and Sven and all that. There's so much to talk to you about, but thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Trev. Send love to all the family as well.
Thanks, buddy.
Love to everyone. Love to Claire and the kids. Bye, mate. Bye.
That is Trevor Sinclair. Great, great chat. And obviously a good teammate of both of yours, and a really, really good player. We should, you know, remind the audience just how good he was. I remember back in 2002, I mentioned the World Cup there. England just couldn't find that left winger, right? And Trevor came on the scene in the World Cup and finally a real winger, because Sven wasn't playing real wingers there, right? And, you know, obviously, you know, wasn't the best of World Cups for England, we know that. But a very, very good player in his day.
Tricky Trev. He was a powerful winger, a little bit different than your usual kind of small winger that kind of got at people, got at players, got at fullbacks. He was great at driving inside. He whipped in a lovely cross, and he could score the exquisite goal like we were speaking about earlier. But an excellent teammate, a very big character within the changing rooms, the locker rooms that we both played for. Mm-hmm. And he would say his piece as well, and that's what I think people enjoyed about him. He was very honest, very open. He would tell you how it is, but he'd put your arm around his shoulder to come for you as well. And I learned a lot off of Trevor, even though he was a couple of years older than me. I learned a lot off him when I was in my younger days at QPR.
Yeah, great teammate.
Really, really good. Now, all in all, really balanced. And even when he talks about what he had to deal with as far as racism goes, you know, he said he had the tools to deal with it. Like, really difficult for these types, you know, the players coming in, the black players to deal with it. Even when you're born in England, coming through that system, you're just kind of coming up culturally. But you need to have that. But all around, fun, has empathy.
You know, he talks about, you know, the social side of the game back then as well. And, you know, not to, you know, champion getting pissed up with your teammates per se, but let's champion getting pissed up with your teammates, shall we? It did bring teams together, right? Do you think teams nowadays lack that a little bit? Within reason?
Within reason. It's different. But I used to think that, I mean, when I moved to West Ham, I actually stayed in the Ipswich area. So traveling back and forth, for me, if I was a manager, I would tell players, you have to live within a half an hour of this. It's just the driving weighs too much. And as well as you don't spend enough time with the players. You know, you come to training, you're straight out, and you leave, and you start heading back home. So having players in the area. So when I was at Ipswich, small community, all the players, 99% of them were British. And 99% of them like drinking.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing.
It was a cultural thing, yeah. But we had a lot of fun. But you would really, really, when you went into a game, fight for the guy next to you, like, because you really cared about him in more ways than just being a teammate. So, yeah, that helped for me.
Well, we spoke about this a couple of times already, about having those teams that either are in a small town or a big town, but yeah, most of the players, 95% of the players lived within that community. And that meant so much off of the pitch as well, whether it be the wives going out together, the wives socialising together, the kids socialising together, the players. At Sunderland, Peter Reid used to make us eat at least twice a week because we didn't have these fancy training grounds that we see now, where we would go out for a team meal in the afternoon and we would have the day off the next day. But it brought so much camaraderie within that group. And you actually learnt about certain players that you maybe didn't click with in the changing room or on the field too much. But when you actually spent some time with them, whether they be a foreign player that's come in from a different country, obviously, or another player that's come from a different club, and you don't know too much about their personal life or their likes and interests, you start to gravitate towards them once you have a common interest together. Mm-hmm. But you also, as you said, show some empathy when you're out on the field with them. You would do anything to support your teammate and to get that result, whether you were coming off the bench, whether that person was coming off the bench, whether they were not in the squad that day, they would all be there to support you and try and have that one goal when getting a result and either trying to get your team as high in the table as possible or getting promoted to the Premier League. We had some fantastic teams that I played for and some great team spirit on those teams.
The foreigners usually got just, eyes were like deers in the headlights when they used to go out and see the shenanigans.
Yeah.
They couldn't believe it. I mean, not to criticise them, because when they came over, they brought an element of professionalism that the league needed as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, were you blown away by the foreign players? Like, you do what? You act this way? You're this professional? You eat this? Did that? Were you bright-eyed and wow as well?
Well, I mean, coming from Canada and playing with the national team here and traveling around, I sort of knew that, but I sort of knew what I was getting into. I mean, I was 16 when I went to England, so I kind of understood it, but it was certainly good viewing, watching lights of Romeo Zondervan come over from Holland and even just going for breakfast to a greasy spoon, right? You know, the lady,
full English.
Lady's got a, yeah, she's delivering the full English. She's got a smoke
cigarette
fag hanging in her mouth, and she drops a
dropping piece some of ash.
Toast. Yeah, toast on the table with ash and just puts it back on Romeo's plate. And it's like, yeah, Romeo, that's it. Yeah. Welcome to Jack's calf.
Talking about foreigners, you told me a story once with Harry Redknapp and a foreign player. I think it was a Romanian player that was in the squad one weekend, and they couldn't find him.
That's right.
And they called him or text him, and he was in Harrods or something with his wife shopping.
Yeah, that's right. Who's that? Not Boogers. There was a few.
It was
it was a Portuguese guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish we had Trevor on still. Yeah.
He was in the squad. Apparently, he was in the squad. He picked the roster, and he hasn't turned up for the game. So they urgently trying to get hold of him to get to Upton Park. Where are you? You're missing, and you've got lost, whatever. He's called him up, apparently, Harry. He's like, where are you? I can't remember.
Well, I tell you one of those. Javier Margas. Remember, it's a Chilean guy, Javier Margas. Yeah. He never really settled. Good player, played in the World Cup for Chile. comes to West Ham. His wife didn't speak any English. He really didn't settle, so she wanted to go back to Chile. And he was in the hotel, the Swallow Hotel, just off the M25 there. And so Harry and Frank Lampard Sr. were going to go have a chat to him and try to settle him down. And he was already made up his decision. He's going back. So they go into the room. He's on the second floor. They're knocking on the door. Meanwhile, he jumps out the second floor window.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Never. And he jumped out the window. Never. So they saw him jump out the window. And they get in the room. He's got his gear. Never saw him again. Went to the airport. Flew off back to Chile.
Had enough.
Had enough.
Had he been to Jack's Cafe?
No. That was in Ipswich.
Oh, okay. Ipswich, okay.
Yeah. Maybe he should have been to Jack's Cafe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Well, around East Ham, there's some...
Yeah, dodgy cafes. Nice play and mesh around there, though. Whoa.
But no matter what, I mean, whatever level you play at, there's a camaraderie in teams. We know that. And I think we saw that this weekend for both sets of teams in the Everton-Spurs game. The Andre Gomez injury. Just dreadful.
Yeah.
Dreadful injury. And, you know, you saw Heung-Min Son crying. He was sent off, which was... ludicrous. It wasn't a red card offence. It was how Gomez planted his ankle and twisted it. Just awful. And even Serge Aurier had to leave the game soon after. Couldn't continue.
Yeah.
Do you have any similar experiences, like awful injuries that just affected perhaps both teams on the pitch?
Yeah, I remember Phil Whelan, big centre back at Ipswich. He was going to block across. Pitch was dry, a little crusty, and trying to lunge in, and he planted his boots and his studs got caught in the ground, and his ankle rolled, his tibia fibia went, his knee went. It was right in front of me, and it was just the most gruesome thing I had ever seen on the field. And yeah, it does play a part, certainly. And then, you know,
are you then just not, I mean, obviously you're a goalkeeper, but you're not going quite as hard into challenges for the next few minutes, or are you moving on pretty quickly though?
You have to move on, obviously, because that's your job and you have to, you know, do your job, but it does affect you for sure, and the well-being of the player, wondering whether the player will ever, you know, just looking about his health and getting back again.
Fortunately, I've never ever seen an injury like that on the field. I've been very fortunate. I've seen people knocked out or kind of lose consciousness, but... never in that mode. I mean, we go back to the David Booth injury at Old Trafford.
That was, Coventry, right?
For Coventry, yeah.
That's 96.
Terrible. Like, yeah. And I go back to the injury at the weekend. I really feel that the referee kind of got caught up in the emotions. I mean, when you're looking at it from the TV, you can even see the crowd. There's like a couple of women in the front row, and they recognise what's going on, and they see the horrific injury, and they're actually in bits as well. And you see the likes of Son emotionally breaking down, and it's a really unfortunate thing to see. And I agree with you, Shams. I don't think it was a sending off. The referee's given a yellow straight away, and I think he's seen what the injury has kind of ended up in, where a fracture to the ankle, and it's horrific how it's turned the other way, the leg. And I think he's got caught up in the emotions. The players as well, from Everton, there's a couple of players that are in his face saying, "That's a red card, look at his ankle," and I don't think they helped as well. What I did like, I was reading the post-match comments, is that Seamus Coleman went into the Spurs locker room afterwards, the change room, and was consoling Son, because apparently he knows all about it. He's had a horrific injury as well, and no player in their right mind wants to see a fellow teammate or opponent end up with an injury like
that. I want to ask you about that, because I agree. I mean, very, very few players want to actually intentionally hurt someone, but there must have been some players you knew were out to get you.
Early 90s, there was players that wanted it to hurry. I mean, I remember playing in a game against Sheffield United, and Neil Warnock's on the sideline shouting to Keith Curl, "Break his legs, break his legs." And sometimes that was a normal thing back in the late 80s, 90s, just to kind of impose themselves or... scare tactics, whatever we call it over here. But
that's why the game, when you look at the game and the likes of Diego Maradona and the team talks, anybody playing against Maradona, our team talks would be get into him right away.
Yeah.
Put one into him. See if he can deal with it.
Yeah.
Because you knew he weren't going to get sent off for a nasty challenge. Right, maybe a booking.
He did his thing despite people literally trying to break his leg.
Right.
Yeah.
Which kind of just raises the legend of Maradona, Pele, different era, right? And so we can criticize the way the game's gone in some regards, but that's not football. That's not sport when you're literally trying to break someone's legs. Mm-hmm. It just isn't.
No. And even we spoke to Trevor today, he was kind of isolated at times as well, where he was a tricky winger, he was a game changer, and for sure, opponents, head coaches, managers would really try and give the information that we have to stop their main playmakers as best as we can, whether it be through a heavy challenge or going through the back of players back in the early 90s, late 80s. Going through the back of a striker or a winger wasn't even a yellow card. It was just a warning from the referee, hey, oh, don't do that again. Now it's obviously vilified a lot more. We have all these cameras, we have VAR, but we have referees that are trying to stop or stamp out that dangerous tackle that can end a player's career. Like, and I go back to Sun's tackle. It was a forwards tackle in chasing back, in trying to help out his team defensively. It wasn't malicious in any way. As you said, Gomez has planted his foot. Aurier's come in an unawkward kind of collision as well, and I think that's added to the pressure put on the leg that Gomez has planted into the ground. I think looking back on it, the FA may rescind the card. I don't think Sun is going to appeal against it because he's just emotionally caught up in what's gone on with Gomez now. So that's unfortunate.
And Sun is not that kind of player anyway.
No, he's definitely not.
He plays the game with a smile on his face. Yeah. Right.
And generally speaking, we talk about the game the way it was. It's better now.
I think so, yeah.
The technical players are able to play, and back in those days, there's several of them now wouldn't be able to play. They wouldn't be able to handle that sort of physicality. But it's better to watch now. You see the
hockey syndrome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where the big bruises are out of it now.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. The game's changing.
The game's changed.
Teams like the Leafs, for example, are going pure skill and speed. Now, whether it's going to work out or not, we're going to find out, right? But the day of the goons, end of the bench, getting a tap on the shoulder, that's gone. Mm-hmm. And maybe football in the same, not quite the same extent, obviously, but it's changing.
Same. Yeah. It is. And then, like the Leafs in hockey, everybody talks about when the push comes to shove, then you talk about, again, the character. You go back to that. You need a little bit of grit. Yeah.
They need some more grit.
You need some grit. And even when you look at the Man Cities and the Manchester Uniteds of back in the day and the Arsenals, and like they had that as well.
Balance, right?
Balance.
We're talking about grit. Balance. We're speaking about the MLS Cup final this weekend.
Yeah.
Toronto have showed a lot of grit in getting through to
incredible character, let's be honest.
A lot of people wrote them off early on in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But people within the club, myself included, knew that once they had the momentum going into the playoffs, that they could go all the way. And they've proved that with the missing of two players, influential players in Josie and Omar.
But that's what makes it so special, this one, is that unexpected.
Yeah.
They can, MLSE is quite happy to pay the money for the designated players. But they didn't have any of that. You know, Giovinco's gone, Altidore's injured, no Vasquez. And then you just had a bunch of players that gritted, grinded, found a way.
Late goals.
And late goals. And it's been really impressive. I've actually really watched it. I mean, they haven't been electrifying displays of football by them by any stretch. But there's different ways to win football games, and you have to be able to find them. So credit to Greg Vanney as well. He was under a lot of pressure different parts of the season, so he's managed to get to the final.
Yeah, there's the 8-game winless streak, and he was on the way out. If you read the message boards, and they're never wrong. Yeah. And then he's turned it around, all because of his lucky scarf.
But you have to remember as well, at that part of the season, we had a lot of players missing. Toronto had a lot of players missing. Gold Cup was on as well.
Right.
So everyone within the club, and I think Greg will allude to this as well, knew that once everyone was back from the Gold Cup, they added a couple of really nice pieces in the off-season. Nick DeLeon, Richie Larry has come in and done a really good job. But there's a lot of unsung heroes in the team as well. We spoke about Q Westberg, who's done a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of vets and experience in that team as well that maybe are not starting, like Drew Moore, but will help the younger players or help the players within the squad, give them that advice and that information to push them on. And there's a real sense of team spirit where we're speaking about. The character has really pushed this group on. And as you said, sometimes we can speak about Liverpool and Man City attacking at flair and playing at the full guns blazing. TFC haven't played full guns blazing yet, but they've won games. They've showed great grit. They're very organized. They've gone to Atlanta, picked up the result. They've gone to New York City, who won the league this year, picked up the result. And now they find themselves in the final against a very good team, Seattle.
Again,
at home.
Isn't that getting a bit boring?
Nope. No.
Seattle again.
First Jesus time in 4 years. Christ, this shows.
This is the rubber, right? This is the rubber.
Yep.
1-1, lost one each. In the final.
That's right.
Full House at Seattle.
I'll be there next weekend.
Yep.
Yeah.
Supporting the Reds.
Nice.
Yeah, I love seeing a guy like Marco Delgado, you know, who I did his first game when at Sportsnet we were covering TFC, and, you know, that was a few years ago now. And now he's a veteran with already a championship under his belt, and he's, again, a key contributor. I love that kind of story.
Should talk about the CPL final.
100%. That was next on the list here. Craig, thanks for reminding me.
Yep. We're going to talk
Forge,
about the
Forge, Bobby Smyrniadis and Forge. Bit of an upset in the end, beating Cavalry.
Probably, although they were very good this season, too. Basically, Cavalry and Forge were the two best teams right out of the gates, and they did really well. Tommy Wilden, we had him on here last week, won the fall season, won the spring season, and fell short. But credit Forge, you know, that was really impressive. They should have put it out of reach in the first leg. Could have scored, hit the crossbar three times and could have been three or four out. And then left Cavalry an opportunity back home. Strong field, sellout, great atmosphere. Not the greatest game of football. The pitch didn't help either. But to do that after that as well, it was a boost having Borges back in after they received the red card.
Which was that the right call, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't violent conduct. I don't blame the referee either. I think it was just one of those cases where he thought he saw some violent conduct.
He got an elbow to the head, the neck, right at the same time. I mean, I understand why he may have kicked out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But overall, the season was good. I thought it was a terrific first year. The standard, Danny, was much better than I thought. The teams did really well. It gave the opportunities for players and referees and coaches to you know, get put at their trade at task there. And I thought it's excellent. And, you know, we're talking about other leagues a lot, but you know, this league's going to grow, and it's the first year, but it's our league. It's our league.
And exactly. And Tommy was on last week and speaking about maybe some new expansion teams coming in. Has there been any news on that yet? Has there been any?
No, I know Saskatoon had a lot of support at the game.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, it was great to watch,
actually. I was out in Saskatoon about 3 months ago. We took our younger group out there, U19s, to play an exhibition game. And they have a really nice setup there. Joe Bellin is there, who's trying to help out and push through. I went to the X at the Saskatoon Fairgrounds, which was an experience in itself. But there's some really good people there, and they're trying to push soccer through there. So maybe that is a good example where maybe they can get another team out close to the West.
Yeah. We'll get somebody on when...
Joe would come on the show.
Yeah, we'll talk about that and see where.
No, we'll get a lot of CPL, I think, content moving forward because you know all those coaches from Stephen Hart to Rob Gale to Tommy Wilden, they've all done a great job promoting and selling the sport as well, which is part of the mandate when they came in, and they're all well spoken, have a bit of charisma. And Stephen Hart's one of my favorite people in football. You know, back in the day when he was coaching Canada, he gave us all the time in the world at the score.
Yeah,
great guy. Yeah,
all of them, right to the man. They're great individuals doing the right thing for the league, doing the right thing for their communities. And it's like I said, it's been a great first year
and a good rivalry brewing as well, right? If you think about it, with Forge and Cavalry.
Well, with only many miles apart, would they play nine games, I think, in the row, or in the end they played all season? So
some of the schedules are brutal.
Yeah, Halifax. So you're playing anybody that many times, you're not going to like them.
Yeah, exactly.
Simple, right?
Let's get the Ottawa Fury in there as well, can we? Please, just get over this nonsense.
Mm.
They should be there.
Addition, yeah.
They should be there, 100%.
I think it'll happen.
Yeah. All right, before we leave, very quickly I want to mention this because I didn't get a chance to, but that Jorginho pass to the Tammy Abraham in the Chelsea match against Watford today, on Saturday. My God. Pass of the season, wasn't it?
Fantastic pass. I think it was a little bit tactical as well because when you can see Watford and you've obviously scouted them within the first 10 minutes, they tried to put pressure on the opponents. They step high with their two centre-backs and you can see Tammy Abraham just drifting in between them. And the ball is laid back to Jorginho and he has a quick look and he bends the ball around the two centre backs and Tammy's on his toes and he finishes superbly. But we speak about tactical now. So Jorginho has been a fantastic, fantastic addition this year to Lampard's group, who are a young group, and we all know Jorginho was Sarri's guy. He was his cog that
at Napoli didn't really work out last year.
Chelsea, he kept playing him, even though people were saying Kante needs to play in there. But he's really fitted into Lampard's system well, and Lampard's doing not bad.
He's not, you know, he might be good, right? He might be good.
Well, I think he's got the right tools for sure, right mentality for it.
Yeah, you know, results are everything, and that club don't mess around with anybody when it comes
and
to.
They're talking about
the greatest managers in the world.
They're talking about the transfer embargo being lifted in January now. They're appealing against that, so maybe they can bring in some heavy artillery to help out. But do they really need him?
I'm going to say it's working really well. The young players getting minutes.
A big striker. And then Tammy sits on the bench.
Right, exactly.
Tammy's like up there, top scorers in the Premier League now. Would he be getting that chance if Chelsea had this transfer embargo lifted? You look at Mason Mount, who's got himself into the England team now.
Yep. Look at Pulisic.
Playing well, scoring goals. Jesus. The Canadian boy at the back tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, okay, he's not Canadian. He's chosen to play for England now, but you grew up in Calgary, was it?
Yeah. Could you imagine if Canada had him playing at the back?
They win the World Cup.
Hey, never know. But that would be such a brilliant added addition to talk about balance of the Canadian national team at front to back. That would just be brilliant. But
it really would.
I guess that's the job of the association to try to make sure that these guys come and play.
So Bayern fired Kovac this weekend as well. So I wonder how that affects Alfonso Davies,
who's played three games in a row now.
Yeah, and not all at left back as well. Interesting stuff. Brilliant. All right, guys, we're out of time. That was a really fun show. This weekend, as I mentioned, Man City play Liverpool. You can join Craig and myself, courtesy Footy Talks and Homestand Sports, at the Rec Room as of 11 a.m. Eastern. It's a free admission. There will be, though, a great lunch to be served with some pints. Please join us. We'll hang around and do a little panel and talk about the MLS Cup final as well. Or just MLS Cup, I should say, sorry. Just seems more natural saying Cup final. Sounds better. But MLS Cup. These will be there, of course. I'm sure in an ambassadorial role, right?
Supporter role.
No punts for you, right?
No.
That's this Sunday, though, so please join us. Once again, please follow us on Twitter, footy_prime. Instagram, it's Footy Prime Podcast, as it is on Facebook. As always, you can find us on deanblundell.com. I'll be on Dean's podcast this Friday talking all things Footy Prime. Maybe a bit of football and God knows what else. No, and that podcast is a ton of fun, though. It really is. Our thanks again to Eggplant and producer Dan Wong.
Woohoo!
Whoop, whoop.
He doesn't love me.
No one doesn't love you.
Everybody
it's good English.
Dan.
No one doesn't love you. Our thanks to Trevor Sinclair, by the way. Great guest. We're getting back on once again. So thank you so much, everyone. Cheers for listening.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. Show.